Welcome all to the show. I'm your host, Sully. And with us, we got another invaluable cartoon and sitcom writer in the form of Joey Clift.
How's it going, everybody? Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be guest on the show.
Woo! Invisible audience out there.
Woo-hoo. We did it.
So, you've been a busy man. You've been working on all kinds of different platforms and writers' rooms. But first of all, where did it all begin?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, I've most of my career has been kind of in the animation space, but, I originally got started, I would say I went to school for, I went to school because I originally thought that I wanted to be like a small market TV weather guy, like, basically like, you know, reporting the weather in a small town, they get to have like fun personalities and stuff like that.
And if you're wrong, you can't be fired.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it feels like it's the most, it feels like it's the hardest to get fired from TV news job. But while I was doing all this, small TV weather stuff, like basically I was also doing a lot of, you know, college TV kind of at my college. And my professors kind of saw what I was doing and basically pulled me aside and says like, hey, it's like clear you want to work in comedy. Why don't you just do that? So, I took their advice, moved to LA, kind of through alumni connections, got like a really good job as the assistant to the guys who created the show Scare Tactics on Sci-Fi, hosted by Tracy Williams. And that was super fun.
This is one of your first gigs.
That was like a month into moving to LA, which is like, I lucked out huge. And then just like dove into the LA comedy scene, like places like, you know, Upright Citizens Bit Theater, Second City and all that. And just, you know, kind of like worked my way up from there basically.
And those are the stories you kind of remember just because they are just so nutty.
The entertainment industry, it's like a wild industry in that, like, I feel like if you ask 10 different writers or actors what their path was, you're going to get 10 different answers just because it's like there's not like a clear ladder. It's like you kind of like, you know, you just like hustle until you make it, basically.
And I love how you're also just very proud of your heritage and you're just very progressive in the material that you're covering. What tips and tricks would you say you have for today's generation who have to remind others that you should always be proud of your family tree and never feel like you got to fit into a certain demographic or group?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm like Native American and rolled cowlitz and I grew up on the Tulalip Res in Washington State. And I'm just somebody that like, growing up on a res, I was like always surrounded by just like really awesome Native culture. And like my mom is like, you know, she's where I get kind of my cowlitz side of my family. And, you know, she would always like, you know, invite me to powwows and stuff like that when I was a kid.
Oh, lovely.
I remember it was the sort of thing where it was like, where like she would invite me to that and I'd be like, no, I'm playing Grand Theft Auto 3 or whatever. And then like, I think as I got older, I started to realize like, one, like, you know, I mean, like, Grand Theft Auto 3 is very fun, but like maybe I should have gone with my mom to some of those powwows.
Yeah.
You know, too, I think that like, I don't know, it's like, it's, I think it's cool to be proud of like where you came from. And that doesn't necessarily have to mean like, you know, genealogy, but it's just like, you know, right, what state you're from or what country you're from or what, you know, what your upbringing is. It's just like, be proud of who you are, you know?
Totally.
And, you know, I kind of found myself in this spot when I like started getting involved in the LA comedy scene where it's like, you know, like I was like a mentor for the Native Student Center at my college. I've like always been just like, you know, involved in like that kind of stuff. And, you know, I just noticed that like I knew a lot of really funny Native comedians through like kind of Native Hollywood, the collection of like, you know, 500 or so Native folks that work in the entertainment industry. But like, I didn't really know a lot of funny Native comedians who were like getting opportunities at kind of big mainstream comedy theaters like UCB and stuff like that.
It's so hard to break in.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to break in, but it's also one of those things where you like, you realize, oh, part of it's that like, if there's never been a Native person in that position before, there's never been somebody to like kind of let the door open for other Native folks, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, you know, that's something like once I kind of noticed that I was one of the few Native folks getting those opportunities, I really tried to like, you know, like be very vocal about my heritage, just like for visibility and then using my position to kind of like give other super funny Native comedians opportunities.
This was around the 2010s or?
This was like once I got on a house team at UCB in like 2013, it was like, I was like trying to get it to happen. And then like it just, I don't know, like the artistic directors of the theater at the time were really weird. And I remember like there was this one time where they like were asked if I could do like an all-native comedy showcase. And they said that there wasn't room on the schedule for it. Meanwhile, they scheduled 12 Star Wars comedy bit shows in 1 week. And I'm like, yo, you couldn't have done 11. But, you know, after a few years, like artistic directors changed and, you know, new artistic directors were more into the idea.
You're not the only one. I hear Andy Richter on his podcast talked about how he avoided one of those Second City type UCB type things just because he knew one of the professors there just really hated his guts. And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to go in a class and have this guy, you know, demean me in front of everyone.
Yeah, it's weird. I think it gives you like a good comedy education, but
it is.
But it's like anything else, it's like, you know, it ultimately becomes high school, right? You know, where it's just like, and I think it's just a new like social thing.
Isn't it wild how it goes in stages? Because like I studied improv in high school, garbage. Oh, cool. Everyone's just imitating SNL and Chappelle's show, but no one's actually, if you try to do something, you're not funny. And then college was very serious. Everyone was like, go for it, man. You know, and people who just wanted to be entrepreneurs or business types would also take it because it was kind of like becoming a salesman. You wanted to learn acting, persona, where you stand, how you present yourself. And so it was a double win. I still love improv because it allowed me to just realize not just the sky's the limit, just the whole make a split decision instead of just waiting permission for something to exist or, you know, so if someone says you got to go, you know, buy a ticket to another country, I'm just like, I'm going on Spirit. Boom. It's not, do you want American Airlines? Do you want the, you know, no more of the thinking endlessly, you know, in a pickle.
Yeah. Well, I think that like the first improv class I took at UCB, the class was like half like, you know, actors, comedians, and half just like lawyers and accountants that like
wanted to be
like funnier in meetings for their accountant jobs.
Oh,
they were all super nice, but it's like, but it's sort nutty. Of like, but it's like you think about it and you're like, yeah, improv has a lot of really good tools to just help with like life, you know.
Do you ever meet up with some of your classmates on occasion where you're like, oh, we got to just do a seminar just to catch up, let's go to the next live comedy show you guys are hosting?
Oh yeah. Like I took my first improv class like, you know, in 2010, so forever ago. And like, yeah, we still like, you know, run into each other right in the scene and like, you know, text each other and like we're all friends.
Oh, lovely. And I see that you produced one of the, going back on your heritage again, and how you got just such a welcoming voice. You produced one of the Reservation Dogs making up panels. Have you ever, and you met some of those actors and everything, have you ever thought of working on very progressive shows like either that or Dark Winds with Zahn and company?
Yeah, I was a writer consulting producer on a Netflix series called Spirit Rangers that was like,
yes.
It's like it was like the first ever kids animated series like created by a native person, the genius Shumash TV writer Chris Valencia, with like an all native writer's room, and I was a part of that writer's room. So yeah, I've definitely like worked in that space a lot, and like I don't know, it's like it's so cool because those shows are like the first shows in history created by a native person in the United States.
No
like,
one's for, exploited. You know, no yeah. non person is whitewashed in a role. It's all in the blood, you know.
Yeah, but it's also just like, it's just a cool experience to like go into a writer's room full of people who all know who like Redbone is, you know, or like,
yeah,
you know,
you
or like insert native thing, you know. And yeah, so it's like I worked on Spirit Rangers for 2.5 years and I definitely, you know, hope to, you know,
what is a skinwalker is like.
Yeah, we all know
this mythology to you.
Yeah, it's like there's never a point where like somebody's going to call a meeting a powwow and we have to just be like, hey, actually, a powwow is not a meeting, like, you know.
Oh, totally. And it's just cool to have these kinds of just pleasant cartoons also, you know, because there's just so many other ones you'll look at on TV and you're like, whoa, how'd that get a PG rating? You know, that's very gross and sexual even, you know. They've got poop talking on legs. I don't want to show a kid that, you know?
I mean, look, as a comedy writer, that's an A+ joke is talking poop. That's my go-to.
Yeah, I know.
But no, I get what you're talking
nightmarish
about.
Visuals.
Yeah.
Give him a few more years before we go into Tim Burton territory, you know? What are some other tips and tricks that you recommend to any struggling writer on just setting your time management, outlining your vision, and just figuring out how to pitch?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So a couple things on that. Like, it's such a big question. I would say that, like, at least for myself, I try to look at it as, like, it's important to win the day. So it's like, that doesn't necessarily mean that every day you're going to sit down and write an amazing script. But, like, if you sit down and, like, I don't know, spend 20 minutes just, like, making your outline a little bit better, or, like, working on a script a little bit, like, eventually you're going to, like, edge the ball down the field to the end zone, you know? And, like, you know, it's okay if things take you a little while. Don't get too discouraged. You know, like, I think that the more that you do it, the more comfortable that you get doing it. But that's to say that when you start, it's like, it does take a little bit to get the motivation up. But, like, you know, so yeah, just, like, win the day. Like, don't feel discouraged if you only do a little bit every day. But if you do, like, 5 minutes of work, eventually that'll add up to, like, a finished kick-ass script, you know? Just, like, be nice to people. Like, this is, like, a relationship-based industry where, like, people tend to hire people that they, you know or worked with before. Like, I think that for me, most of the jobs that I get come from, like, people that I did UCB shows with at, like, 2013 in 2013 or so, where we were doing midnight bit shows in front of six drunk people or whatever, you know? Yeah, so it's like, so yeah, be nice to people, you know, definitely write. Like, I think that as a writer, the key to success is to, like, create work that you're proud of and then put it out into the world. So it's like, you know, if you write a script, make a short film and then submit it to festivals. If you want to do comedy, try stand up or improv or something like that. Just, like, situations where people can see you actively be funny and good at your craft, while also having, like, you know, good scripts to back it up when somebody says, like, wow, you're really funny. Do you have, like, any writing samples or anything? and then you were talking about this earlier. I feel like we skipped past it. I'm just writing from a place of, like, you know, my heritage and my background and stuff is, like, I think that what you're ultimately, like, selling as a writer is, like, you're kind of selling your story. So, or at least, like, your unique POV based on your story. So I think it's, like, I think it's important to, or you're going to get some of your best work when you write about stuff that you care about. Like, you know, if you really love, like, I'm a big professional wrestling fan. And, like, I remember the first time that I did, like, a professional wrestling themed bit in a comedy show. And that was, like, more fun than, like, any other bit that I'd done before that, because it was like, oh, I really care about pro wrestling, and these are all, like, deep nerd pro wrestling references. And, like, yeah, that's pro wrestling. And, you know, like, I also feel, you know, maybe more intensely about writing from it, like, you know, about native stuff. But it's just like that was my upbringing, something that I really care about and am passionate about, and, like,
it's never going away.
I just feel like it's so much more fulfilling to write, to tell those stories. So it's like, I would just think about, like, as a writer, like, what do you care about? Like, what do you, like, really give a shit about? And, like, write about that and try to write jokes about that. And, like, what you write is going to be so much more unique than if you were just trying to write, like, the best Batman joke or whatever. Unless Batman is something you desperately care about, then write a Batman joke, you know?
Lovely. And that's a mouthful too. Why do you think you're as organized as you are too? Because, you know, some people like to kind of just write all night until the jokes finally emerge. And other times, like you say, you had a lot of spacing out techniques. Why do you think so many will just kind of just stress on the deadline while realizing, you know, hey, you know, you got to make it, but it's not going away?
Yeah, well, I think that for me, it's like 50% necessity. Like, I'm a writer. That's, like, how I pay my bills. So it's like, for me, like I had a deadline an hour before we jumped on the Zoom, and I was definitely, like, rushing today to, like, get it out the door by 6 p.m. you know? And, like,
oh, dear.
And I hit it right at 6 p.m. I think that once you've written, like, a certain type of thing a few times, like, you know, a half hour sitcom or, like, a quarter hour comedy or an animation script or whatever, you start to learn, like, how long it takes for you to write that sort of thing. So it's like, for me, like, I know how many days it takes for me to write, like, a first draft of a kid's quarter hour script, or, like, a first draft of, like, a half hour sitcom. So it's like, in that case, I just know to carve out, like, a couple of days or a week or whatever for that kind of thing. And then it's just like, if my deadline is you know, today at 6 p.m., then I just back time it. I'm just like, okay, so I need to start on this, or I need to put like X amount of days on it. So that means to get it done by that deadline, I need to start it on this day at this time, you know? And that's just like, you know, to pay my bills and do jobs so that they keep hiring me. But you know, as far as personal stuff goes, where there's not necessarily a deadline, I think it's just like, I feel like I'm in a fortunate position where, like, you know, I feel like I'm at a point in my career where I get like offered a lot of stuff that I don't necessarily say yes to. And so I think that for me, it's like reminding myself, like, when I wake up in the morning, like, okay, I turned down a job that would have paid me this much money so that I could have time to write this script that I just want to write. So like, make sure that I do that, because if I didn't, then I just wasted all of the money that I was offered for the job I turned down, you know? So it's like, those are kind of motivators. It's just sort of like understanding that when it gets to it, kind of all you have is time, and like making sure that like you are using your time wisely, you know?
Totally. It can be made easier, but there's always some distraction going on.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I've got like just like practical stuff of like, I listen to like, when I'm writing, a lot of like I'm looking at a YouTube video right now that's like 3 hours of gentle night rain sounds for sleeping, and it's like I listen to that while writing, and it's just like,
oh man,
the sound of rain on a YouTube video, or it's like
meditation music.
Yeah, or like, I don't know, it's like I listen to like Final Fantasy guitar covers over the sound of a fireplace or like something. So it's like, you know, you kind of find stuff like that that just like, what's the, if you need that to help you like zone in and sit down and write, like, you know, go for it. Or like something I used to do is like, I would just like go to Denny's and like order like a skillet or something like that. And then I would just like know, okay, they've got like free Wi-Fi at Denny's. So I'm just like, I'm paying for this skillet, but I'm also paying to be at this Denny's for like 90 minutes to get some writing done. So I better not just look at Twitter while I'm at this Denny's. You know?
There you go.
So it's like, you just kind of find like, what's the thing that helps you write, and then like just do that thing, you know. I think that takes a little bit for people, because I feel like everybody works a little bit differently as to like what's the thing that helps them focus. But it's like, once you find it, it's like, for me, that's kind of, you know, key, and just getting the shit done.
It goes back to the whole form of improv. Don't try to be funny, just listen, observe.
Yeah, well, just like listen to yourself, and it's just like, what works for you? Because like, you know, what works for you might not work for somebody else, but yeah, like once you find what works for you, it's easier to kind of get the wheels turning.
Essentially it. And it's just also cool that you found a form of happiness instead of, well, I'm gonna keep doing this until, you know, the roof goes up in flames, you know.
Oh, I mean, I definitely do feel that way about the entertainment industry, that it's just like, maybe it's a sinking ship, who knows?
But don't
like,
get too comfy.
Yeah, well, I think it's just like the entertainment industry, it's just like built on a foundation of sand. And it's like, you know, new companies and new streamers and new networks like will spring up and then collapse 3 years later. And it just kind of happens ad nauseum. So it's like, for me, it's just like, I like telling stories, and I like writing, and I like funny for a living.
I hope Netflix doesn't screw the Poochon Spirit Rangers.
No. Netflix is great. We got a new season coming out next year.
All right, good. Because they've been doing it with so many other shows where you're just like, seriously? You could have told them.
You know? Nah, it's like, no, we definitely have a season 3 that's coming out next year.
They're so mean to live action.
Yeah.
So what you were talking about... scare tactics earlier, do you have any hysterical Tracy Morgan stories?
Honestly, I don't think I have any hysterical Tracy Morgan stories. I was like, so they shot that show in New York, and I was in office in Los Angeles, so like they shot all of Tracy Morgan's, you know, like host bits in New York, because that's where he lives. So it's like my hilarious Tracy Morgan stories are that I wrote bits for the show, and he said the bits, and I was excited that he said the bits, you know.
It doesn't matter if it wasn't the best take or if he didn't say it believably. You're like, hey,
oh yeah. At that point I'd been in LA for like 2 months. So that I was writing jokes for Tracy Morgan is like insane, you know?
That's lovely. I was able to interview Matt Gallant of ESPN, MTV News. You might know him best from Planet's Funniest Animals, That Matt. And
Oh,
he
cool.
talked about how, you know, half the time it's just like, it doesn't matter if the pun you're about to say on the teleprompter wasn't worth the shit. It's just like, I'm going to say it. I'm going to kick ass at it. That's kind of just the mentality you have after a while. Something's got to go in the can. And it's easy to be a little workmanlike, but you let everyone else worry about that, you know?
Yeah, well, that's what's so cool about, like, writing for good hosts is like I wrote I was a writer for Nerdist. I'm working with a really great host named Jessica Chobot for a while, and she's just like this fantastic like host personality person.
They're very
and, like,
comedian friendly.
Yeah, and it's like I remember I would like write jokes for Nerdist News for her to say, and I would think while writing it like, oh, this like I don't know, this joke's like not great, like, but it's, you know, like I have an hour to write it and we've got to turn around quick, so it's like I'm not, you know, I'm doing my best. And then she would like, and then we would go to like record it, and she would just like sell the F out of that joke. And like, I would see her perform it and be like, oh, that actually was a pretty good joke. So like hosting is like a good, it's a specific skill set. Whenever I work with hosts that are good, I'm just like, oh, you're like a different breed, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that's just it. Like the cooperation and collaboration, you know, anything can misfire, you know, and half the time you'll talk to actors and some of them got such a big head, oh, I liked it until I got cut out. I'm like, yeah, but you still got to be part of a major motion picture. And then there's other ones where it's like, yeah, they said it, but you know, we'll leave it to history on whether or not, you know, it was a wonderful ensemble or if it was too many cooks in the kitchen, you know. It's just,
yeah, what I think that like I mentioned earlier, it's like I feel like Hollywood, it's just such a, I think that it's an industry where like a lot of things happen, like, you know, you might get rejected from a role or not get a writing job, or you act in something and you're cut or whatever. And like 9 times out of 10, probably more than that, probably like 99 times out of 100, that has nothing to do with your performance or how you did. It's just like, the movie was like 2 hours and 10 minutes long and like they needed it to get under 2 hours. So like they had to cut something, you know, and like you had like a funny side scene with the main character, but you didn't like drive the main story forward, so it's like, I don't know, you just gotta lose something, you know, like and that's not like as an actor, it's like that's not that's not a thing that you should like take as an ego hit. It's just like,
yeah,
you know, we're all, there's 1,000 people working together to make this movie, and just, you know, shit happens sometimes.
And it will.
Yeah.
So you have a wonderful voice. Every time I heard you on Who Would Win, have you ever thought of doing a just some voice acting in an audio drama or podcast or cartoon? You did like a few voiceovers, but it's been minuscule.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, that's the sort of thing where like my voice has been like this since I was like 14. my voice has always been this, I don't know, deep or whatever. And I remember like a lot of people have said, I mean, like, you know, kind of going through the news path of trying to be a TV weather guy, it's like that sort of, you know, that or radio news, this kind of like leads into that. I've definitely thought I should get into voice acting, but I just like haven't like actually sat down and like pursued those kinds of roles. But like, you know, I get asked to do stuff here and there, and like I've kind of voiced a few things here and there.
Would you like to voice a dream role?
Okay, what is I'm gonna say Homer Simpson, because that actor makes so much money.
There you go. I can see you being a vampire hunter or possibly just a hysterical store manager in a mockumentary. We have the worst customers ever at this Home Depot.
Okay, thanks. Oh, well, that's,
and
that's
I have
type.
To clean up
to
their
it.
Shit.
yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things that it's like I'm primarily a writer. I'm a writer comedian, but I'm like primarily a writer, but I'm definitely like, oh, I should do more voice acting or something.
Totally. You know, I
also
mentioned
thanks for listening to me on Who Would Win. That's such a fun show to guest on.
Absolutely. I was going to so ask you, however, did you, there's a lot of UCB guys on there, but how did you meet them on the LA comedy scene?
Okay. So I actually, Robert Chan, the producer of that show, and I came up,
love him.
Yeah, he's the nicest guy. We came up around the same time in sort of the LA comedy scene. We just, you know, have been friends for the past, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 years or whatever. And he produces the show, and he just like knows that I guest on a lot of podcasts. So he hit me up and said, like, yeah, do you want to guest on it? And I, you know, met Ray and James through just like being on the show. And they're, you know, like, look, I know they've got tough personas, but they're very nice people when they're not arguing about which superhero would win the fight.
It's an act, guys. Obviously, they're all going to disagree on it, but they know at the end of the day, it's just a game, and it's no different than gambling.
That's weird. It's weirdly such a high pressure show to guest on, because like, I feel like they're so intense. So because of that, I feel like I have to be really intense.
Oh, when I was interviewing Gapsy, I just about shat my pants. I was just like, I gotta be on his level. I gotta make James happy. I don't know why. I don't even know James.
Well, and like they turn it on where it's like as a judge on that show, like, you know, you ultimately have to choose a winner or a loser.
Infectious energy.
And the last time I was on it, that was my third time guesting. And the first two, I think I went with James as the winner. And like and like so Ray like kind of like tried to cut me down, and I was like, and I argued back as to why I made the choices that I made. And like James was like pretty nice the entire time. And this time I chose Ray as the winner, and James cut me down like 15 times harder than Ray ever did. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, I thought you were the nice one. But they're nice guys. They're passionate totally about the
they
show.
They just gotta brag on it because they're like, what I do. It's like when you see people at a party and they're saying, I gotta go. I'm like, whoa, did I say something?
Yeah.
Oh, and it's just so funny how it goes in waves and forms.
Yeah. But yeah, it's such a fun show to guest on. And I'm happy to be, you know, in the family. And I think I won like best rookie judge or something like that last year, which is like really cool. Yeah, I think I'm the best. I think I won the best new judge.
They need to do a mock award show then each year. Yeah.
I know. Where's my trophy? That's what I'm asking.
Ding, ding, ding. And then Crystal Storm comes out and presents it.
Yeah.
Robert inserts fake crowd noises or something. I don't know.
Right.
Oh, yeah, it's a fun collective. And the fans are even more just wild because some of them are on like the sister shows too. It's a very fun collective.
Yeah, and like, and it's really cool to see how like passionate the fan base is too.
It's not even
like
about the versus matches at the time. Half the times it's just about wacky things. Like, I wonder what would happen if James or Ray rep this character.
Yeah, totally.
Altogether, are you gonna make any other podcast appearances possibly in the future?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've got a digital series that was distributed by Comedy Central earlier this year called Gone Native, that like I was right about to start like going through and touring podcasts and stuff like that. Around May, that's like when we like finished our website, gonenative.tv. But that was like right when the writer's strike happened. And I felt like, oh, I would feel really weird if I, even though the show was not WGA, so it's like the show is not struck work, I was like, oh, I'd feel really weird while my friends are hitting the picket lines when I'm, you know, being on podcasts and being like, and you should support this thing by a company that is being picketed, you know. But so I'm definitely gonna like kind of go through and probably do a big podcast tour and start promoting that in the near future. And I'm really excited to do that.
I did see that NPR gave it some attention, so that was good.
Oh yeah. I feel really lucky. It's like, I think I sort of like a lot of people found it and wrote stories about it and like interviewed me about it. But I feel like I have a lot of friends in the podcasting space, and like really was like ready to start gusting on friends podcasts to talking about it. But it was like, oh, I should probably wait until after the WGA strike to talk.
Do it in waves.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, I don't know. I'm always on podcasts.
The videos are on Vimeo as well. Saw some of the ones on there, and it's a feel good kind of animation too. It just, no one's ever put down. And why do you think you're just so good at just kind of a inclusive kind of chat?
I honestly nobody's ever asked me that. I think I try to not be a jerk to people. I don't know, it's like, yeah, that's such a good question about like, because all those shorts, like they're Gone Native, it's a series of digital shorts about just like weird microaggressions that Native folks deal with. And like, I try to not be finger pointy with that kind of stuff. I try to kind of treat it like, we both agree this is bad, right? You know, that way people can feel like they're kind of in on the joke instead of being like lectured at. Yeah. You know, you get more bees with honey, that kind of thing. I think it's just like a tone that I find really funny that I kind of realized as I was doing it. Also, this is useful to teach people things, you know,
kind of like
yeah, as a comedy writer, it's like, I write stuff to crack myself up. And then you realize, oh, wait a second, I could use this for good. Like,
don't have to be snobby. And it doesn't always have to be a college humor or Adam ruins everything format either. It can be whatever's in the moment.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And if you're still with me, I'm going to hit you with this other little jib jab.
Yeah. When I think it's like, that's the sort of thing where I was talking about earlier about like you just like the more that you do comedy and like the more that you do it, the more that you figure out what your comedic voice is. And it's like, what do you like to tell jokes about? And also just like, what is the tone at which you tell jokes? And it's like, that's just by doing it, you know? And I think, just like whatever that is of just like doing stuff that's kind of like funny but informative in a way that's like not threatening or whatever. It's like, yes. I don't know, that's a pocket I exist in, I guess.
Isn't it wild though? I don't know if you ever listen to any health or fitness trip tips and tricks. It seems wild how the main key thing for when we encounter people who are mean or bullying or just snobby but not even funny anymore is often insecurity. It's like people feel threatened by someone else, and it's like, well, you shouldn't feel mad at someone who knows something you don't or is good at something you're awful at, you know.
I think that for me it's like I've been doing like live comedy stuff since I was in like high school, and
so you're already kind of fearless in a way.
Yeah, well, it's more just like, oh, it's like anything that anybody could tell me, I've definitely had said to me via a YouTube comment at some point in my life. So it's like, you know,
bring it.
I think it's just like learning the difference between like, if like somebody is making a constructive comment or if they're just being a troll. Because it's like, it's not that you shouldn't listen to every bit of feedback that you get about, you know, your comedy or your work or your writing or whatever. It's like, if I write a script, I send it to my manager and friends, my literary manager and friends, to like give me notes on it. And like, I don't expect them to come back and say like, this is perfect, you know. But it's like, I'm not going to look at like random 12-year-old commenting on a YouTube video saying that my voice sounds dumb or whatever. Because it's like, shut up, you're 12, you know.
Right. You guys are mean anyway, so what does it matter?
Yeah, it's just like you can't please everybody, so it's important to like, I don't know, just like you don't have to like take every bit of criticism that you get, and also just like understand
the serious
that, like,
ones from you should be able to tell the difference between someone who's talking shit behind the scenes versus someone who actually said something threatening to you at a party. You know, it's like, okay, I'm taking that seriously because that was a threat versus that was
just like
9-year-old in, I don't know, in Norwegia who just wanted to comment on a random video he didn't like.
Yeah, well, and I think that it's like, I don't know, some people are just haters, so it's like you can't please everybody, like, so it's like, ultimately, like, if you're proud of the stuff that you're doing and like people who you respect think that what you're doing is good work, then, you know, you're doing fine. That doesn't mean that, like, I mean, I don't know, it's like, if you think about something like, what is the most universally liked thing in the world? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like Star Wars. Like
any movie like, that's 100% on Rotten Tomatoes is going to have at least 50% of people who legit do not understand the hype.
Yeah, it's like there's nothing that exists in the world that every person in the world is going to be like, love it, you know, like, so are you going to, so, you know, if you make something and like, you know, 50% of the YouTube commenters or whatever, or Twitter commenters or people on social media,
they've said that on like 5 other gaming videos.
Yeah, it's like, if they say, I hate this, this is bad, but then half of them are like, I love this, this is great. It's like, are you going to listen to the people who hate it or the people that like it, you know?
It's already one ear out the other. I had one guy who was a prick on Facebook and then went so far as to copy that comment on both Apple and another podcast forming site. And I was just like, okay, so what? I doubt anyone saw any of those comments, and he felt nothing in his power to be helpful.
That's also like, you hear that and you're like, dude, get a hobby. like,
yeah, too much why is free
that guy,
time.
Why is that guy like feel so passionate about a podcast?
Yeah,
that
he's copy like, and paste.
I'm gonna do a negative comment, the same negative comment on Spotify and Apple, and it's just like at a certain point, like I don't know, like get a job.
Well, and those guys were not gonna be part of your demographic anyway, really.
Yeah, totally, 100%.
Now, if you're getting something behind the scenes where you can improve, you know, I'm going to take it seriously. It's like, okay, I couldn't hear you
sure.
On the last one. Okay, I'm going to record on this audio format and see if the audio increases the wave levels on that one versus this where you couldn't hear us.
Yeah, it's like that kind of thing. That's like real criticism. That's like real, like, good criticism.
They're serious as opposed to vague. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I have an aunt who wants to listen to my podcast, and I'm like, I've said politely a few times, ratings or not, I don't follow video games or politics, so I don't think you would be the audience for this.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's the thing too, is like everything.
Where can I find you? How do you spell it? What's it
like mean? Everything that you make doesn't have to be for everybody. It could just be, it's like, you know, it's like Spirit Rangers is a show for like, you know, like a younger kids. So it's like, and it's like a show that I'm really proud of. And I think that we did a really great job.
A lot of
like,
adults are cartoon fans too. They would gladly watch that with their kid.
But it's but if somebody were to comment on Spirit Rangers, you know, like a 40-year-old dude or whatever to be like, or it's just like, this feels like it's kids stuff. And it's like, yeah, it's for kids. Like, you know, it's just like, it's sort of, yeah, nothing. You are not the target audience for every single thing. Everybody, you know,
there are people trying to just do other trends, and you can kind of tell like what kind of radical audience without naming a particular one that they're a part of. And I mean, it's just like, if there is nothing, what do you hope to accomplish from posting this?
Yeah,
I used to take that so seriously, and then it became, I'm one of many assholes with an opinion, so there's nothing. I'm not going to change the world in the next 50 seconds. I don't even feel passionately about what I'm typing up. So
stop
right here, unless I actually really think I want to put some time into this right now.
And just, I don't know, some people are just haters, and it's like,
Yeah. And isn't it wild too, how half the time reviewers will claim, oh, someone is upping, you know, it's an inside job, upping all the ratings. It's like, or maybe that's just where it landed.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing, is like, it's possible that other people like the thing that you don't like. Like, you know, it's like your opinion is not everybody's opinion.
Mm-hmm. And the final user rating is not the final remark either.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, this has been a very engaging and detailed summary of how to make it in any kind of atmosphere. I feel like
most of it was just us trash talking bad YouTube commenters.
There's that too, but I mean, getting a thick skin, and
100%.
What I really hope for when doing these chats. Anything else you want to tease or?
I think we pretty much covered everything. I would say, definitely check out my Comedy Central Digital series. Definitely check out my Comedy Central Digital series at gonenative.tv. And then you can follow me on social media, at JoeyTainment on Twitter, Blue Sky and TikTok, and then at Joey Clift with 5 or 6 eyes on Instagram and Threads. There are so many social media sites, and I keep on forgetting which is which.
And half the time we don't even know.
Yeah
It won't be here tomorrow, there'll be something else that takes its place.
I feel like there were like two days where I was like, and you could follow me on Mastodon at, and I'm like, I haven't logged in Mastodon in 4 months, you know.
I'm just glad you're staying positive, because I see so many others who just kind of want to let the world eat them up, and we can't have that, man.
Yeah, I think that that's the thing too, is like it's important to stay positive. It's like, especially like speaking, as writing and creatives and stuff like that. It's like, like you might not necessarily see fruits from your labor tomorrow, but it's like if you just like work hard and are nice and like just keep pushing and creating work that you're proud of and then putting it out into the world and like, on stage at comedy shows or making films or making funny TikToks or whatever, like you'll eventually be rewarded for it. You just got to kind of keep grinding. And it takes a while, but it pays off eventually.
Hopefully, man. But more importantly, as long as you don't feel compromised mentally
Yeah.
or physically. I just battled insomnia, and I recommend anyone, just instead of just getting all caught up and the different ways, just don't treat it as a battle. That's what everyone else who was dealing with it also told me. And it's literally that. Find a way to even it out. It's easier said than done, and it's going to take a few months, but worth it.
Yeah, for sure. It's all a process.
Yeah. And you do a little something different each year. It's kind of wild how we even if we know our life is going to change, we still it's easy for us to get spoiled and want to just do the same thing each time, every day. And it's like, well, that's just not going to happen. You won't
Yeah,
be at
for
the
sure.
same workplace. You won't even be living in the same area.
Yeah, for sure.
This has been a godsend, and I keep turning those wheels.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks again for having me. This was super fun.
Absolutely.
We'll return after these messages.
The Jacked Up Review Show podcast is honored to be part of the Blind Knowledge Podcast Network. Join anytime, talk the talk, and enjoy yourselves. There's something enlightening for everyone with this crowd of cool cats. Check them out.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, "Give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win." On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.